FM News Center.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Money Talk. I'm Neil Kreisel, and Diane Duvernay are your hosts every week right here on AM 1290, FM 96.9, and streaming at AM 1290, KZSB.com. We're repeated at 11 and on Saturdays at 6. We're brought to you by American Riviera Bank, smart banking for smart people in Santa Barbara, at Figueroa and Anacapa Streets, and in Montecito's Upper Village. And Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm in Santa Barbara, providing its clients with the personal care and attention of a small independent firm, coupled with the vast resources of a major financial institution.
Hi, Neil. Happy Monday. How are you doing?
Well, I don't understand. It's not raining.
I know. You don't know what to do anymore. Are the dogs happy to go out and take their walks now?
Yes. Yes. They were, as I have hunting dogs that won't go out in the rain, which is, you know, typical Santa Barbara dogs. They're so spoiled, they need to only go out in dry weather.
You know what they say about dogs is that they're mirror images of their owners, right?
Well, that's a good point.
So anyways, on that funny note, I love it when I try to stump Neil and he actually gets stumped. So we have with us today, we're thrilled to join Mark Gurner, who's the founder of EcoGo. And we're thrilled to learn more about EcoGo on the show today. Mark, thanks for taking the time.
So excited to be here with you all.
So the first article I think is really an important one, and it's about immigration, and it's entitled Immigration Pressure is Taking the U.S. Economy Up. And, you know, this is a narrative that is so different from the political discussion about immigration. And it begins by saying that the share of immigrants in the U.S. labor force has steadily increased for more than a decade. In 2006, 15.3% of the civilian labor force was made up of foreign-born workers. The share hit a record of 18.6% in 2023, which, as Mark Zandi of Moody's says, is, quote, is probably one reason why the economy grew so strongly last year. In simple terms, he said, more workers generate more goods and services. Larger number of people earning paychecks means more consumer spending, the lifeblood of the U.S. economy. More people paying income tax on earnings boosts revenues. Immigrant workers have also helped put downward pressure on pandemic era inflation by easing the shortage of workers. And top of the story is the prime age labor force participation rate of U.S.-born men without a college degree grew anyway at a record pace in each of the last 2 years. In other words, the economy is both absorbing immigrants and generating job opportunities for U.S.-born workers. The idea that immigrants are taking our job is deeply misguided. So that's so interesting because and if you look at Japan, you could see that when you have a declining population, you are essentially hurting your GDP growth. And here it is an important part of the reason why we've had such a resilient economy. And both parties now are discussing how to stop immigration. So it's just such a paradox.
Although I definitely think you need to take a look at the difference between legal immigration and illegal immigration, right? And so, you know, that also plays into it. I think most people are for immigration that's legally done. It's the illegal immigrants that people are having a problem with.
I'm glad you asked that. And I did not underline it, but I have to find it. But it said that the number of illegals, and I can't find it now, but it was definitely well below the total number of jobs created by immigrants. So you have to take my word for it because I can't find it. But the idea that most of the immigrants were illegal is just not true. Most of the immigrants-
Well, that is the real problem in the immigration discussion, yeah, is that most people assume all immigrants are illegal, which is not the case.
Right. Anyway, if I can find it later, I will point it out. The next article is entitled, and this is by Jason Swag in this week's Wall Street Journal, You Missed Out on NVIDIA, So What? And it begins by saying almost 28% of the S&P 500 gains so far in 2024 came from this one stock. NVIDIA stock is up 59% in 9 weeks after gaining 239% last year. This past week, the 10 biggest companies in the S&P accounted for one-third of the total market value of the S&P. NVIDIA alone counted for almost 5% of the total value of the S&P. And he points out that this is not unique over the history of investing. In the 1950s, AT&T, DuPont, General Motors regularly exceeded 30% of the value of all U.S. stocks. In 1955, GM alone accounted up to 78% of the gain in the U.S. stock market. What's interesting about NVIDIA is he points out that earnings have risen even more than its share price. So one could say whatever people are concerned about because NVIDIA's rise has been so great, not only is the story, the AI story, very persuasive, but their earnings have actually exceeded the growth of the stock. And the rest of the article is about FOMO, fear of missing out. And he's saying people may be interested or convinced that they have to buy the stock now. And he goes through a whole analysis about how when you find the Nifty 50, which was the 1960s, Polaroid, Nisman, Kodak, and they did very well, and you piled in at the end, you actually ended up not doing very well. So he's cautioning people that just because NVIDIA has done so well and the top four or five stocks have done so well, fear of missing out could be a major mistake.
Absolutely. You see that oftentimes, people wanting to jump on board at the end of the run-up, and it typically doesn't work out well for them financially. You know, look at all the Robin Hood stocks or GameStop back in during COVID times. You saw what happened to those people. People who got in lost all their money.
The next article is interesting in that it talks about the value of a college degree. There's a major study was printed in the Wall Street Journal on this weekend. And it showed that the majority of colleges exceeded the minimum economic measures of their graduates, having a typical annual income that is more than that of a high school graduate with no higher education. The only issue, only schools that did not meet this success was the for-profit colleges, which provide certificates or non-comprehensive college degrees. And that's not a big surprise.
But like non-degree granting programs?
Yes. The analysis found that schools where students earn less than their peers who never attended college were generally those offering non-degree certificates, which can be completed in 18 months or less. People say, I don't want to take on student debt. But the fact is, after 10 years, it's very, very clear that college graduates do much better economically than those that just have a high school degree. And the last article we have is inexplicable to me. I just can't believe this is true, but it was in the Washington Post, so I assume it's true. Thousands of millionaires haven't filed their tax return for years. The IRS sent out 125,000 notices to high-income earners that have not filed their taxes. I just don't understand it. I can see people, I mean, I can see, but I would not be surprised that people didn't report their expenses correctly or maybe even fudge their income. But how could someone making over $1 million a year not bother to file taxes and think they weren't going to get caught. And this goes into the whole discussion where the Republicans don't want to fund IRS at a higher budget number, because this is, to me, you know, easy pickings. If you have enough money to go out and investigate, these people have the cash, and it would be economically viable to raise the budget of the IRS, in fact, one of the few agencies that actually can make you money for the kind of money you invest in.
I can't even believe that. I saw that article as well, and I thought, oh my goodness, you know, that's a lot of dollars being left on the table.
Yeah. So, Diane, just to make sure, you are filing your tax return?
I am, and just like you are, correct?
Correct.
All right.
Correct.
Mark, you can weigh in if you want, but feel no obligation.
No comment. So anyway, we'll give everyone a chance to think about that. You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 and FM 96.9, and we'll be right back.
It's a fact. Successful wealth management is built on strategies that focus on the big picture, take a long-term view, and establish deep and valued relationships. Hello, I'm Diane Duva, founding partner at Arlington Financial Advisors, Santa Barbara's trusted family guide, empowering you to make more informed and confident decisions. At Arlington Financial Advisors, we bring order and balance to your financial life by monitoring and managing risk so you can focus on your work, family, and enjoying the moment. We are a fully independent firm offering strategic financial planning, estate and tax planning, and private money management. Our plans and portfolios are handcrafted using a rigorous and disciplined approach, supported by a consistent yet highly personalized client experience. Our clients look to Arlington Financial Advisors as a home away from home, a comfortable place to protect what they've accomplished while they prepare for what comes next. Please visit arlingtonfinancialadvisors.com or call me, Diane Duva, at 805-699-7300.
In the Santa Barbara community alone, one in every four people will have a mental health condition this year. Unfortunately, only a fraction of those who experience a serious mental illness, such as depression or bipolar disorder, will seek treatment or support. For over seven decades, the Mental Wellness Center has been responding to the critical needs of people in the Santa Barbara community and their families who are impacted by mental illness, providing support, education, and direct services. We believe that early intervention is key and that recovery is possible at any stage. Mental health is a community matter that affects us all, and that's why we're so committed to building a community of wellness and creating hope for a brighter future. Step up for your own mental health. Visit mentalwellnesscenter.org to learn more. That's mentalwellnesscenter.org.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence.
And we can be reached at 805-5- Ooh, I'm going to give the old phone number. Richard, help me out. What's the new phone number? 5102. Or you could email us at moneytalk1290@gmail.com. So if you're just joining us, we have the pleasure of having with us today, Mark Gerner, who's the founder of EcoGo. And I'm really excited, Mark, to find out what EcoGo really is. So do share that with us and welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to come out of the recesses of a silo journey building this technology. And so we're finally kind of spreading our wings and getting out there. Just in brief, EcoGo was built with the intention of bringing clarity to a really complicated process of discovery. There's a lot of people out there that want to buy better, and it's difficult to know what is better. And so the mission of EcoGo was started around the idea of bringing X-ray vision and some insights into products and compare them against one another for how much they share and how those values that they share might align with you, so you can make a wiser decision.
And so where did you, as the founder, where did this idea come from? How was it hatched, so to speak? You know, was it just something you were thinking about that you wished you had, or was it a conversation amongst friends? It's always fascinating to me to learn how entrepreneurs like yourself come up with these ideas and then go from idea to execution.
It's funny you use the word hatched. I was invited to go to a summit called Hatch. And there's that.
I didn't know that beforehand, everyone.
No, I love it. I became really enamored immediately with this group. It was a bunch of do-gooders coming together from everything from the banking institutions to artists and musicians to entrepreneurs. And so we met up in this particular instance in Panama. And I got to meet like the guy that created Watson and, you know, some really amazing movers and shakers in their respective fields. And I got really inspired. And I was also starting to segue out of the film industry, which was where I was doing my work as a concept designer and a futurist. And I did a little breakout session with a small group of like 12 people. And they said, hey, come up with something that you're really passionate about and present it back to this subgroup. And I did a couple drawings. And one of the things that just kind of hit me like a lightning bolt was to provide like this tool, you know, an app, a web app that you could like aim at something and see what it's composed of. You know, how is it treating people? How is it treating materials? What's its longevity like? How much carbon did it take to manufacture, et cetera? And I presented it back to the subgroup, got really excited internally, almost more than the reaction I had. I just felt like something really powerful happened to me. And then from that moment on, I changed my vocation and attacked this problem.
So let's go back to your vocation, because that's a very interesting jump. First, how did you get, where did you go to school? What is your path? How did you get into the industry and then subsequently jump out of it?
I don't know how unusual this is, but it feels unusual. I came from an art background, but it was industrial design and commercial art. And so I was very inspired by futurism in general and architecture and people that were designing the next phase of the goods that we have, whether it be a building you walk into or a product that you're gonna, you know, put into your household. So I found out through my folks about a school called Art Center in Pasadena, and it looked exactly like the world I wanted to participate in. And even some of the heroes of mine that I was learning about at the time in my teens that had contributed work to Blade Runner, the movie, or had designed automobiles like concept cars, they had gone to this school to get their training. And so I made my path across from Chicago to Pasadena, and then did night school and applied and eventually got in. And then did a minor in entertainment design because it was really clear to me that some of the work I was doing would also apply towards the film industry. So that was my path to that point.
And then, did you actually make the jump into the movie industry or entertainment industry?
I did do concept car design. I worked for BMW for a little bit, and I just freelanced and did everything from TV commercials to stuff for Las Vegas. I worked in the film industry for about 11 years, working on everything from Minority Report to Iron Man 2 and so on.
And so when you got this lightning bolt hit you at this Hatched conference, that this is a great idea, did you envision it an app like they have out now for the plants where like you hit the plant and it's like, water me more, water me less, that type of app?
Yeah, 100%. And that's the next steps as we move into a stage of looking for investment. We're going to take the assertions of the metrics that we've built and then apply it towards a tool that would do visual recognition as well as barcode scanning. So if you're just out and about, whether you're using AR, VR glasses, whether you're using a phone, RFID, whatever the method is to bring the data, that you could be looking at the built world with a filter, and that filter's lens would be like, that's not in alignment with you, or it is. And so that's what we're working towards.
And so interesting that you say alignment with you. What does that really mean? And how do you do that? Given that, you know, I think about it in terms of we all have a different filter and we all have different value systems. Is it your value system that the lens is that we're viewing the world through, or is it everyone's individual? You know, can I individualize that to myself? And the reason why I ask that is on your website, you talk about a trusted place for values-minded shoppers to compare products, social, environmentally, quality, governance, and origin data. But let's say I like to buy all my stuff cheap from China, and that's who I am. Yep. Would this actually have that lens that I could choose that box, or is it pre-chosen for me?
No, we did not want to eliminate the way you access the marketplace. So as opposed to saying like, oh, you're only going to see ecologically minded product, the way I see it is you want to meet people with where they're at. And a lot of the people that are on the lower end of the economic spectrum get the most damage by goods that are designed to fail. So I wanted to meet the marketplace in its different machinations and different demographics. So if you wanted to buy a cheap piece of crap, you can. we don't stop you from that.
And so is that where you get the, you know, because your tagline really is the world's first transparency engine. And so is that where that transparency comes from, where this product that you're looking at was built and how it was built? Was it built by child labor in, you know, God knows what country, or was it built in a B corporation in some other company or country?
Yeah, exactly. I think that the more that a company shows about how it does its process and how it delivers its products to the market is what we showcase. So the more transparent you are, the higher you score. So that's why we call ourselves a transparency metric, because the attributes that stack up then compete against the others within their category.
Do you need the company's participation to create the filter? Do you need them to help you, or can you do it totally from the outside?
It's outside looking in at the publicly facing data that they share about what they're doing.
So if they decide you're annoying them, they can't stop you by not helping you because you don't need their help?
We don't.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 and FM 96.9, and we'll be right back.
Our family has been here over 30 years. We've always been in the hospitality business. So when we're looking for a bank to finance our deal, American Riviera actually stepped up for us. They know Santa Barbara well. Right now, we don't have any plan to open another hotel, but if we do in the future, we'll be talking to American Riviera Bank for sure.
You can bank on American Riviera.
We do.
American Riviera Bank. Bank on better.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. I came out in the 11th grade. Nobody was embracing you. The kids were cruel. It was very difficult to be gay. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
The hard part was determining that I was going to do it, but I definitely didn't do it alone.
At age 30, with the help of her mentor, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
I have a mentor, Maria. She convinced me to continue my education and to finish what I started to get my diploma. Just never judges. She's a true role model. If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, go get it. You can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
FM radio, as we know it, began this month in 1941. That's when the first commercial FM station went on the air in Nashville, Tennessee. World War II interrupted the advance of FM broadcasting, which slowly began to gain popularity in the 1950s. Today, some 78,000 people work in the country's 15,500 stations, of which nearly 11,000 broadcast on the FM band. Profile America is a public service of the U.S. Census Bureau.
Hey,
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by American Riviera Bank, making your life easier with cutting-edge technology, mobile deposits, free use of every ATM machine in the country, and a level of service other banks can only dream about.
And we can be reached at 805-692-5102, or you could email us at moneytalk1290@gmail.com. So before the break, we were talking about your transparency engine. And so how did you come up with transparency engine? Is that your own creation, or is that part of kind of the lingo of this sector of the world?
Because I actually got a trademark for that slogan. It felt so right for what we were doing. So we looked around and we actually did a patent, a trademark search, and nobody was really using those two words together. And so that felt kind of novel, but that was coming from just a feeling that because what is best wasn't really how we were building the system. It was really about celebrating the data that, like as I mentioned before the break, that people share outward. So if a company is being really sheltered and they're not telling much of their story, then you don't know how to really evaluate them. So the idea is that the more that a company or a brand shows about its process and its behaviors, that you have more trust that can be imbued in your acquisitions. And so that was kind of the driving force behind this. So it could even be a negative declaration. It could be that my products contain something that's known to be toxic. Better to know that and then act accordingly. So food products would be a great example of that, or transdermal products, things that touch your skin, go in your body, that you eat. You might want to know if it has an allergen. And I think that there's more and more energy now, like in clothing, to know what's toxic, to know what's not beneficial, and then make a decision accordingly.
This is a question that only a neurotic New Yorker could ask, and that is, if this thing explodes and everyone's using it, do you have liability if you use public information to come up with the conclusions and you were wrong? It does have peanuts in it, and my child got really sick on peanuts. Are you, in a sense, in a kind of reverse way, giving your imprimatur on a product that's based on information that may not be right?
Yeah, the way we describe it or put an asterisk on this is that the data is collected from a brand's own website, as well as the marketplace. So, for example, if a brand says, I make a shoe, it has this rubber, it uses these certifications, they're sending that out across all their site maps. All the shopping sites are out there using that data. Some of them glitch. Some of them actually, we've in our data scraping, we've learned about a lot of misspellings, bad punctuation and grammar. We've had to normalize all that. But yeah, I believe me, what you're asking is a great question, because I was nervous initially about how is the data, the terms of use and privacy policies addressing this work that we're doing. But it's essentially commons. So once you put a product on the marketplace, the legal advice I've been given is that, we're just taking that data and we're reorganizing it in a way that makes it more palatable and actionable. So you can really look at it, compare it, and act accordingly.
And do you take into account reviewers? So for instance, if you're on, let's say you're on Amazon and you're buying something, you read the reviews, do you take into account what those people are saying too, or just the data that companies put out into the world?
Yeah, right now the system at this stage is all objective data. And then what is subjective would be elements that are brand-wide attributes. So for example, if a brand says I'm BIPOC owned and operated, that's a great piece of information, but it might not make an objectively better product from a transparency perspective. So we capture now, our system just expanded about a month or two ago to capture now the social, environmental, and quality attributes of a product, along with governance, origin, and those three, social, environmental, quality, from a brand-wide perspective. So are they 1% for the planet? Do they do initiatives in their community with education or planting trees? So what allows you to do then is say, I want to be aligned with this brand because they're in my ethos, but I'm buying this product because it meets these criteria that are objectively better. you know, long warranty, for example, or it has a certification that gives you confidence that children or, you know, or people weren't being abused in the making of the object.
And so, you know, as I'm poking around your website, explain to us how it actually works. You know, it starts about helping you actually make choices between similar products. So walk us through kind of a verbal demo, if you will, of how it would work.
Yeah, absolutely. So you can go at our search engine, like a lot of search engines, you can kind of type in what you want to see. We organize the world of stuff based on categories. And that's the rating, is like the judgment is made between like with like. So we're not putting toilets against, you know, coffee cups. We're putting things in their troughs. And so, for example, we would we have a bare minimum of products that we look at in order to create a numbering system. So we have a minimum of like 15 to 30 products, depending on what the category is. We then grab all their relevant data, and then we compare them against one another. So if you were to say, type in shoes, you could type in men's running shoes. You're going to see those brands that are making men's running shoes. You can select the ones that appeal to you, and you can select them based on a brand, a color, whatever is driving you. But our score is the primary ascending value. So we start with 99 down to a zero. So you can say, I want to see what the top one in this, you know, in what Ikogo says is, you know, the most transparent, the best. And then you can go down to whatever the lowest scoring was. You can click up to 5, and then you can compare them. You hit the compare button, and then you get to see them side by side and say, you know what? Actually, I can buy that shoe. That shoe is in alignment with my values. And it actually is not even a bad price. So that's the interesting thing that's happening with our system. It's not always transparency equals cost. Sometimes really great brands are bringing their product in at a really good rate. It's just we don't know about them because they're not telling their story in that way.
And that's how do you grab the data? You say you grab the data. Is that through AI? Or I mean, I'm sure you don't have just people sitting there and doing it. It would be uneconomic. How do you technologically, quote unquote, grab the data?
That's actually, we did it the really costly way initially to start the company. So we built a little bit of scraping technology, but we still to this day do a lot of manual grab. And then we're right now about ready to implement our own AI scraping. We call it an AI sandbox, and allows us behind the scenes to collect and normalize. But we still do a lot of what you see on the site was actually done by my data team, learning how to grab, where to go, and how to put it into its right place, and also deal with spelling issues.
Is this thing live? Do you have a beta site, or is it live?
Oh, it's live. It's been live actually for a year and a half. We've been just cleaning up the data and expanding our data. So just to give you an example, we're about ready. I think we're about a week away from going public with origin data. So when we were talking about things made in different countries, you're not going to be able to use our system to look for designed in, assembled in, manufactured or made in. So if you say, I want to buy something from Denmark, you can use our tool positively to filter for. But if you can say, I don't want to buy something from China, you can then use the anti-filter to deselect a country or an attribute that just doesn't appeal to you.
So how do you monetize this now? Are people paying for the right to use it?
No, it's free. So right now the B2C or the public facing side of this is that it's a free site. We're testing these assertions, and we just started our business pipeline to help businesses by recommending the way in which they can present their product. So we got our first customer about a couple months ago. They're a Canadian soap company called Oneka. And so what we're doing is we're advising them on ways that they can continue to expand their storytelling and grab more market.
Is that how you intend to monetize it? By getting money from vendors and helping their, then consulting with them?
That's one revenue stream. The other one will be affiliate sales. So as we create relationships, we create affiliate sales. When people pop to our site and bounce out, that we would generate some revenue from that affiliation. And then eventually we'll have paywalls so that we can have a SaaS model that allows businesses to change and understand the marketplace and learn how to talk about their products, you know, share a negative declaration, add a certification for being gluten-free or vegan. They might not know how much market they can gain from telling that story and applying to those certifications.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 at FM 96.9, and we'll be right back.
It's a fact. Successful wealth management is built on strategies that focus on the big picture, take a long-term view, and establish deep and valued relationships. Hello, I'm Diane Duva, founding partner at Arlington Financial Advisors, Santa Barbara's trusted family guide, empowering you to make more informed and confident decisions. At Arlington Financial Advisors, we bring order and balance to your financial life by monitoring and managing risk so you can focus on your work, family, and enjoying the moment. We are a fully independent firm offering strategic financial planning, estate and tax planning, and private money management. Our plans and portfolios are handcrafted using a rigorous and disciplined approach, supported by a consistent yet highly personalized client experience. Our clients look to Arlington Financial Advisors as a home away from home, a comfortable place to protect what they've accomplished while they prepare for what comes next. Please visit arlingtonfinancialadvisors.com or call me, Diane Duva, at 805-699-7300.
The Family Service Agency is the oldest nonprofit human service agency in Santa Barbara County. Today, Family Service Agency continues to provide vital services to meet the changing needs of our community. Our mission is to strengthen and advocate for families and individuals of all ages and diversities, helping to create and preserve a healthy community. Family Service Agency programs are available throughout Santa Barbara County. Whatever the issue, disaster information, relief, lack of basic necessities, family violence, isolation, depression, or threat of suicide, marital problems, parenting difficulties, or children at risk, the Family Service Agency can make a fundamental difference in people's lives. Our services are offered to all people of all ages on a sliding fee or donation scale, and many are free due to the generous donations of businesses, foundations, and individuals. The Family Service Agency of Santa Barbara, for everyone who needs us, since 1899. For more information, dial 211 for our free confidential 24-hour information and referral helpline, or if on your cell phone, dial 965-1001. That's 965-1001, or the website fsacares.org.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence.
And we can be reached at 805-692-5102, or you could email us at moneytalk1290@gmail.com. So let's delve a little bit more into the EQ score. And what does that EQ stand for in your scoring process, Mark?
Well, I kind of, like when I was putting this together, the EQ is the first two letters, obviously, of the name ECOGO. But I kind of wanted to hijack the phrase EQ. So it's a, you know, it's emotional quotient or the emotional intelligence. And I kind of thought of it from the perspective of that there is an emotional intelligence and an intelligence to buying wisely. And so I kind of wanted to use that as the phrase. So it's an excellence quotient is kind of how we recap it. But it's kind of that was the idea behind the score is that it's this idea that that excellence and intelligence can be brought into the way we evaluate products.
And what are your main scoring factors that you use or attributes that you screen for within each of these products?
Well, this was an interesting part of the first stage of the journey is when I was ideating and contemplating how to put this together. I had these different metrics, you know, and I had these different ideas about what would be a factor that would be of interest and of a purpose. And I worked and partnered with some different environmental science specialists and people that were sustainability experts. And we came up with this idea that all attributes of a product could be broken into three pillars or three legs of a stool, and it's social, environmental, and quality. And so social is like health exposure, safety, animal welfare, toxins, and those, you know, sort of attributes. Environmental is soil health, resources, land, water. So it's essentially how is the planet being addressed in the extraction or the making of a thing. And then quality deals a little bit with the entire supply chain, and that's a durability and material side of things. So that's for like kind of assessing what is the potential for longevity. And that's where a lot of my North Star is around, is how can we model objects that have really good longevity potential? So that's the three pillars. And so every attribute goes through that process. So let's say Fairtrade International, that's mostly social. But if you're a B Corp, it's a little bit of social, environmental, and quality. So some certifications or attributes kind of sit in different buckets.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, so beyond that, do you go in additionally, as I'm poking around your website, I'm seeing that you have social, environmental, quality, governance, origin. Where do you draw the line? You could continue down the path of so many different, screens. How do you figure that out?
So just to give you an example, when we started the journey we started with backpacks, and then we went to baby strollers. So we just picked a product, and then we started diving in. And so what we did is we started collecting certifications, started collecting materials, we started collecting warranty data, and that was the three first initial pieces. Then more recently, we got into governance, so that, touches a little bit on the structure of a company. And then origin, as I mentioned before, was, where is it coming from? And then where is it designed or made in? And so that's, we just then place them accordingly in our database and then allow it so that a person can search, on the search bar based on these attributes and then filter.
So there are a lot of economists that will say most people are looking at really one aspect when it comes to purchase, and that's price.
Yeah.
And that that drives so many people. In fact, there was an article in the Wall Street Journal this weekend that said even the high-end French clothing brands are now thinking about how they can lower their prices, because even the super rich are beginning to cut back on Birkin bags and other crazy numbers. Is there a sort of a limit to your possible client base? Because most people are just going to go into Walmart and get the lowest price.
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. I think the idea would be is that, let's say if you're comparing two, we talked about shoes earlier, comparing two shoes against each other. You could say this one's $22 and this one's $23. You might find that there's an attribute in the $23 one that's enough to tip you over. And that might be whether it's these labor practice issues that we know are really prevalent in the shoe industry, or it could be a materialization. You're like, I want a more durable material and I heard about this. Or it's recycled content and I want to put my money where my vote, I want to vote with my dollar, and I want to pull some more trash out of the ocean with my shoe acquisition. So the idea is that sometimes, and as I touched on before, one thing is really fascinating in our data is we're finding some brands are making products that are more transparent, have more thoughtfulness, more support for the quality of the good, but are actually priced less. And that discovery is something you wouldn't find unless you had a system like what we've been building to kind of sort and sift that all out and put them against each other in that way.
Your end user is you have a specific target market. How are you going to raise awareness within that consumer base that you're looking to tap into? Obviously, it wouldn't be, the right wingers who are attacking this ESG model on investing right now. It is a person that is looking to spend dollars where their values align, and they're not willing to go to, let's say a Chick-fil-A if they're for LGBTQT plus rights. How are you going to target those people specifically, and how are you going to get the word out?
Well, before I mention some of our strategy around that, one thing that I built this from the get-go is to not necessarily be what could be perceived as a politically leaning platform. So the idea would be is that if you are a fan of domestic goods made well, and you want an American flag sticker on it, our tool can be used just the same way it would be for somebody that uses patchouli as a deodorant and lives in a shack in a yurt. You can aim your interests and then pull from it what aligns with your values. And that's part of the work that was really difficult in the early days, is to build the system to accommodate different values. Now, to reach those different people, that's where our journey is really building right now. So we're using LinkedIn and from a business perspective to get our word out. We're about ready to start reaching further into marketplaces to tell our story. A good mutual friend of ours, Neil, helped out by bringing us awareness in Santa Barbara Film Festival with a slide. So we're just starting the process of getting our word out and seeing, you know, how different types of demographics come to this tool.
Well, and given that it would be a consumer behavior change, you know, people would have to go to your site, eqogo.com, and search for their products before just going to Amazon and buying it. You know, that's where the education piece is going to have to come on. And I think it's a fabulous idea, and even better that you've made it so customizable to everyone's individual value system that, you know, I really think that it can have a great future and really help people align their values to their purchasing. At this point, what phase of business are you in? Are you capital raising, or where are you? Have you been bootstrapping the whole thing? Do you have angel investors? Where are you at on the funding side of the business?
So I guess if it qualifies as being pre-seed. So it was basically me and my family. So it's like a friends and family phase. And now we're about ready to put that phase to rest and move into generating, basically seeking our first round. And so Q3, Q4 of 2024 is the beginning of us, you know, getting our first either seed or A round, depending on how you like to call it.
So in other words, you will be fundraising the end of yep. this year coming right on up. And yeah. in those documents, your, you know, strategy and marketing plan will be even more important as you go out into the marketplace to raise funds.
Yeah. And these businesses that we're starting to help with, we've gotten our first customer. We've got a couple others that are in the pipeline. One's a nonprofit that's pretty sizable. And so we're going to test our assertions and learn. And with that learning, that's where we're going to expand and help more businesses tell their story and take our consultancy, you know, where the market is hungry to learn about how they want to tell what they're more to their customers about what they're doing, and then maybe get more market share.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 and FM 96.9. And believe it or not, we'll be right back with our final segment.
American Riviera Bank is actually really good offering the loan to small businesses. The customer service that Renee gave, it was amazing. She actually gave us step by step. She helped me with every single step on the paperwork. She was great. We found a great bank, and now we have a great coffee shop.
You can bank on American Riviera. We do.
American Riviera Bank. Bank on better.
Well, Jason, I've got to tell you, you're pretty much everything this company is looking for in an entry-level candidate.
Great.
Your resume isn't quite what we're used to, but you've got a fantastic work ethic.
Thank you.
And I'm impressed by how you carry yourself.
So, should we talk about the job?
What? The job? Oh, sorry. Yeah, I have no way of recruiting or even meeting you. This interview didn't happen.
It may sound ridiculous, and that's because it kind of is. There's a huge pool of talent your company is missing out on. Meet the grads of life. Who are they? Talent worth knowing about. Young adults of unique determination and experience. An ideal fit for your company in an entry-level position, internship, or even mentorship. They might not have every qualification you typically look for, but they're exactly who your company needs.
Man, we really could have used him.
Don't miss out on a resource many innovative companies have already discovered. Go to gradsoflife.org to learn how to find, cultivate, and train this great pool of untapped talent. Brought to you by the Ad Council and gradsoflife.org.
They said
if I got drunk,
if I did coke,
I'd be one of the guys.
They said meth would help me get through my exams.
They said synthetic drugs would give me a safe high.
They said sniffing glue was no big deal.
Totally safe.
I could party all night.
It would help me forget my problems.
He said he'd love me forever if I smoked crack with him.
They said I wouldn't get hooked after the first hit.
They said weed wouldn't lead to harder drugs.
They lied.
They lied.
They lied.
He lied.
Find out the truth. The truth about drugs.
Drugfreeworld.org.
Drugfreeworld.org.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by American Riviera Bank, making your life easier with cutting-edge technology, mobile deposits, free use of every ATM machine in the country, and a level of service other banks can only dream about.
So, Mark, you know, as I'm listening to your presentation about your company, you know, which is so cutting edge, you know, I really want to know what differentiates you from other companies in this space that are doing something similar.
Yeah, and it's been fascinating over the years of building this, how many companies are starting to scratch at this idea of a truthing machine. And so we're one of a handful out there, but one of the key differentiators is that when we built the system, we essentially rate things and there's a raw score behind the scenes. And that raw score just accumulates all these attributes and all the details in which we rate them. We rate the raters. So in other words, all the certifications, we evaluate each of them. We evaluate materials, we evaluate the warranties. So all of this goes into our little number cruncher. But then at the end, when you see it on the website from the front end, you're seeing a score that goes from 0 to 100, but that score changes. So as products enter and leave, it's like a grade curve in a college class. So if a really smart product lands, everyone else gets hit down a little bit because their level of transparency and thoughtfulness resets the stage. And that agility and flexibility is, I think, the differentiator of our system. A very complicated one, but a really powerful one.
And so for our listeners out there wanting to poke around on your website and try it out for the products that they are looking to purchase, what's the best way for them to go about using it?
Yeah, just go to EQOGO.com. Search for something you're passionate about or that you're going to be shopping for. And then if you choose to, reach out to us. We have a contact page. We have a little pink logo at the bottom right or purple logo. You can click on that. And those emails will go right to us.
I think you just froze.
Oh, I don't think so. I heard that, Mark.
Okay.
You might have frozen. So that's great for us to know that. And to, you know, I do encourage everyone to go on to the website because it's definitely well done. And there's even a little 30-second video on how EcoGo works and how you can compare the products that you're searching for. Now, in terms of opposition, Mark, in the last 30 seconds, I'm gonna ask this to you. What do you see as the biggest obstacle?
Adoption. I think, if I can use the word prophylactic, right? It's like this idea that acquisition, like on Amazon and other sites, has been made so fast, so immediate, and it's like a dopamine hit. You can just shop in an instant. What we're trying to do is insert ourselves in that practice and have a thoughtful, it's more like, you know, more long-term dating experience as opposed to an immediate one-night stand with your products.
Well, thank you, Mark. Thank you so much. And we're all looking forward to being able to use EcoGo. And it sounds like a great idea that's going to help all of us do better things for the earth and for our pocketbooks. So thank you for being here. And thank you all for listening. You've been listening to Money Talk, and we'll see you all next week.